Death Spiral, the only anime podcast serving two consecutive life sentences for crimes against fan culture. And guess what, people? I'm not sorry.
I'd do it again.
And I'm gonna fucking do it again.
Oh, shit, he's doing it. He's doing it right now.
I'm doing
it. You can't see, but I can see him, and he's doing it.
Hey, guess what fucking fan nerd shit sucks this week?
It's such a constant onslaught of bullshit stuff, but I don't know. I assume you're not talking about the massive corporate upheaval going on in the Magic the Gathering community.
I'm not. Obviously, there's plenty of fan culture bullshit that I would love to murder there. Unfortunately, I would feel like a hypocrite considering how much Magic I've been playing. I'm kind of trying to step away from that realm.
Yeah, you got to be careful with that one. I see you playing ranked out there. I see you.
Yeah, I'm in these ranked games. You might have played me. Might have whipped your ass. So pretty good. I don't want to toot my own horn, but I probably beat the shit out of you.
He's got the heart of the cards with
him. Yeah, but obviously this show isn't about being a hypocrite.
Well, not most of the time.
I would never want to do that. Do you want to give a guess, or should I just lay it out? I feel like it's pretty
obvious.
Just
lay it out. There's too much going on in the world these days to guess. Come on, we both have schedules to keep. Lay it out there.
All right, fair enough. I feel like these are pretty obvious, but I did want to just absolutely eviscerate two bullshit fan culture properties. Number one, you hear about this penguin?
This penguin guy? Oh, no. Here we go. He's going after Colin.
You hear about this guy?
Now, you and I had two very different reactions to Matt Reeves' The Batman film, if I remember.
We did?
You did not like it. You were vocally anti-The Batman when that movie came out.
Yeah, because it was insanely bad. It was insanely bad. Like, one of the worst movies I've seen in modern times.
I didn't think it was insanely bad.
Oh, my God.
I rather enjoyed aspects of it, if I'm being honest.
Wow. I cannot believe what I'm hearing.
I know. I have my own will. I have my own tastes and preferences. I'm not just your sidekick on this show off the air.
Part of the reason for doing this show is to, like, beat that out of you.
Well, try harder.
Look, I'm a Robert Pattinson guy. I think he's great. I really like Robert Pattinson.
You like our Pats.
I like him. Did you see Cosmopolis? I think he's great in that.
I did not see Cosmopolis.
It's really good. I really liked it. He sucks as Batman. He's a terrible Batman. He's not even the worst part of that movie, though. I mean, the whole movie is just a disaster from one end to the other.
Okay, putting all of that aside, then, why? What made you go into to watching The Penguin? HBO Max's The Penguin, presented to you by DC Comics.
Well, and MGM Plus.
And MGM Plus.
Yes, who are all over the place these days. They're producing a lot of content. And I do say content because that is what they're shoveling out.
It's just slop.
It's slop. And I went to the HBO. No, it's not the HBO app. I went to Max, the Max streaming app.
It's HBO no longer exists. It's just Max now.
Unless you're doing pay-per-views for MMA matches. I think that actually still has the HBO brand.
Wild. Okay.
I went to this Max app.
You took it to the Max.
The graveyard of HBO. Specifically for a different adaptation of a comic. I was looking to see if Uzumaki was out yet.
Hell yeah.
I could have just Googled the release date, but, it doesn't matter. I went there, and it was not. And, instead of doing something I should have done, like popping open the Criterion channel, navigating to the Giallo Festival Collection, maybe throwing on the Bird with the Crystal Plumage.
Calling your son, trying to reconcile your differences, you know, get on top of your life, quit your crippling Percocet addiction.
Sure, sure.
These are all stuff that you should have been doing instead of watching The Penguin.
Yes.
So what gives?
Unfortunately, I did watch The Penguin instead. Maybe this is because I saw a tweet or something that was like, hey, actually, this is kind of fun. And I was like, well, fuck it. Why not? You know what I mean? Why not?
Famous last words.
And it's weird. It's a weird thing. I mean, it's fan slop for sure. Colin Farrell is doing a very weird thing. I don't hate what he's doing. He is kind of doing an interesting thing. They got him waddling.
Okay.
You know, he's doing a waddle.
All right.
That's really the extent of his penguinness, though. He doesn't really have a beak.
Does he have a big nose that someone refers to as a beak at some point?
Not really, no. I mean, okay. It's not all a right. small nose, but it's not like a caricature nose.
What about a little tuxedo and, like, cummerbund?
So far, I haven't seen a tuxedo, even though, like, we have had a couple opportunities for a tuxedo. His color scheme seems to be purple and yellow, which, as far as I understood, were the Joker colors, so I'm a little confused there.
Well, I mean, purple and green were the Joker colors, but close enough, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we're pretty on the edge there.
Yeah.
There's a big plot point in the first episode about him driving a purple car.
Yeah, he's driving that purple Lambo, baby.
he is doing a fun thing. In the first episode, they do specifically reference the Riddler doing his terrorism thing. He blows up the seawall of Gotham, right?
Mm-hmm.
Gotham has a seawall.
Well, it's a port town.
In the Matt Reeves. Yeah, it's a port town. It's got a big seawall. So Riddler blows it up because he's like the Zodiac Killer. If the Zodiac Killer was like the Unabomber or something.
Uh-huh. He was a mix of that and just like standard... like online incel forum posts.
Terrible. Awful. Yeah. What an awful choice. Just suck all the fun out of that character. Say what you will, but Jim Carrey, he was really the inspired choice.
Now I gotta say, I didn't mind any of those choices particularly when I watched Matt Reeves' The Batman, but I will agree with you there when you say... Or you seem to be implying that you miss the fantastical pageantry that was part of the Batman Rogues Gallery back in the day, right?
Well, it doesn't even need to be fantastical pageantry, but, like, the Riddler? You're gonna put the Riddler in your Batman movie and he's gonna be, like, a weird, subdued Zodiac killer guy? Are you of all the people? Batman's got a lot of villains. A lot of villains.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though. They're obviously going for a much more, and I hate it because people have been saying this since Batman Begins, right? But they're doing a realistic, a grounded Batman movie, right? And so many of Batman's villains are just straight up fantastical in nature. Like, you can't get around that, Mr. Freeze. You can't have a guy with a freaking...
Love that guy.
Ice gun. If you're doing a Matt Reeves The Batman, right, where he drives around a fucking hacked Dodge Charger.
Yeah, you could if you were brave, if you had conviction.
I'm not against it. Again, I'm on your side here, okay? I think that would be cool if you do just go straight into mixing the weird, like, gritty neo-noir style that they've been trying to do with the straight-up fantastical. You know, I don't think Nolan was the right guy to do it. He almost did it with Bane, right? You almost got there, except he shied away at the
last... He edged up.
Yeah, except he shied away at the last minute with giving him, like, Super Hulk steroids, which is the cool part of Bane.
Yeah, but, well, I will say Ra's al Ghul is in the first movie, and he is, like, a magical ninja in that movie.
No, he's not a he's just a ninja. He's not magical, though.
It depends on how you interpret the training sequence. But that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter.
Ra's al Ghul's whole thing is that he comes back from the dead, which, again, they only had to kill him once in
that
movie.
That's true. Maybe they had plans for the later movies. We'll never know. But that's beside the point. The point is, if you want to do that, Calendar Man is right there, you know? He doesn't have any powers. He's just a weird guy.
I really thought that they would have gone that... When I first heard the buzz around the Batman's development, I heard a lot of people online saying, like, oh, yeah, the script writer, you know, he was taking a lot of notes from The Long Halloween, which is, like, one of the more prominent Calendar Man stories. And so I was really hoping that they would have gone more towards that general vibe and had the Riddler be a fake out almost, right?
There was no reason not to do that. I mean, they were doing it was a combination of year one and Long Halloween, kind of.
Yeah.
If you broke it down that way,
mm-hmm.
In a very loose way, not a choice I would have made personally, but I can see how it could have worked.
Long Halloween is personally my favorite Batman like story. I would appreciate seeing it taken more like consideration in these adaptations, because it does a good job of mixing the neo-noir with the like weird and fantastic.
Sure.
That's kind of the whole point of the story, right? Is the transition from mob-based crime rule in Gotham to this new burgeoning like problem of supervillains.
Of weirdos.
Yeah, of weirdos, and the attention and attraction from superheroes that it brings them, right?
Yes. Which is funny you say that, because I do think year one is one of my favorite Batman stories. And the only real representation it gets is in the one scene I do like, where Robert Pattinson Batman gets his ass absolutely fucking whooped in a fucking police station. That is,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's all right. I like that version of Batman just getting absolutely fucking owned over and over again. But the other thing is interesting, because that setup that you just described is essentially where Penguin is going.
Okay.
We start off with the Falcone's crime family, right? Mm-hmm. And the Penguin is... The Penguin. Nobody calls him the Penguin. He's just Oz.
Which...
They call him Oz.
I don't like that. Call him Oswald. And
Ozzy.
And they call him Oz Cobb. Right?
Oz Cobb.
Oz Cobb. Call him Oswald Cobblepot. That name is fine.
Yeah. Also, not a... If you heard Oswald Cobblepot, would you immediately go to, like, Italian crime family?
No, I would go to a weird, stuck-up, waspy, aristocratic, like, crime.
Yeah, like old money wannabe.
Yeah, exactly.
But the thing I think is interesting, and this is purely conjecture because I always hope for the best. I expect the worst, but hope for the best, right?
It's the only way, it's the only outlook to have. It's the only way to be.
It's the only way. And it does seem like that is the thrust of the show. It starts very pointedly with Ozzy Cobb going like, wow, this Riddler guy, what the fuck is happening to this town? And then we kind of put that to the side. And then later on in the first episode, we introduce Sophia Falcone. She's playing the Hangman.
Oh, okay, sure. Yes. Yeah, Sophia Falcone was one of the main players in the Long Halloween story.
Yes, and her introduction, of course, being like you said, the weird asserting itself into the grounded version of the world, because
mm-hmm.
She's pretty weird. It's she's played by Christine Milioti, who is fan fucking tastic. She is incredible. I really, really love her, and she's doing a great job. But we start getting like she gets weirder and weirder as it goes, because she's like fresh out of Arkham, right?
Uh-huh.
So she is a post Arkham hangman. Everybody knows she's a serial killer already, including Ozzy Cobb, which is fun, because then we have Oz going like, well, she is an absolute psycho, but like, how do I use that to my advantage? Right. It's kind of playing that game. Which is fun. That's a good angle, right?
Yeah, I like that. You know, it kind of goes in the face of Penguin's whole arc in the comic version in Long Halloween, where his whole thing is like he's kind of this, and it's not given much, you know, page time, but his thing is that he's kind of like this link between that old money organized crime world and the new weird, because he's the one siding with the weirdos at this point.
Yeah,
his family's lost their time in the sun, and so he's like, fuck it, all I have left is this weird fucking club, the Iceberg Lounge, and I'm gonna use it as my gimmicky supervillain base.
Yeah, and I think that's essentially where we're trying to go with the show. But it cannot resist just doing the remember
thing. Hey, remember?
It can't help itself. And on the other hand, it can't help itself from just kind of doing a lot of very played out mob TV show shit. And it's like, okay, fine. You want to do Batman Sopranos, which is what everybody's saying. I'm not sure I necessarily agree with that. But they clearly are doing like, hey, what if we did like a weird offbeat, like mafia, post-mafia kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, what? That is, you're making the Batman. Like, why do we need the Penguin to be this show? You know what I mean? It's just like, why are we fucking around here? I don't understand.
What immediately turned me off of the whole concept is, why are we making the Penguin show where the Batman does not show up in it?
Well, maybe he does. We don't know. Maybe he does.
I don't think so. I don't think that they could afford our pats to do a cameo.
Well, the guy wears a mask.
He doesn't do television. Come on, man.
Yeah, but again, the guy wears a mask. That's kind of his whole deal. You can put anybody in the mask.
No,
it doesn't matter.
Have you not learned anything from the Back to the Future Part 2 Crispin Glover debacle? You're not allowed to do that, even if it's in a mask.
I think Batman is a pretty big exception. I think they could get away with that.
No.
Haven't you heard? There are no rules.
There's no rules?
There are no rules.
Well, I don't know. Did you hear about this recently? The term superhero has gone into the public domain.
When was it not in the public domain?
For the last 70 years.
What are you
years.
Talking about?
No.
Are you saying superhero as one word? Or
yes,
are you saying superhero as hyphenated or as two words? Which one?
Referring to a superpowered hero in any combination of the words super and hero was a jointly held copyright trademark by DC and Marvel Comics for like the last 70 years. And finally, a copyright judge said that that was bullshit and issued a ruling that it has to go into the public domain now.
Yeah, and can you imagine how bullshit something has to be for an actual judge to strike it down in the United States of this Americas?
I'm just saying, that's like in shows like The Boys, you know, they always refer to them
boys.
As Da Boys.
Da Boys.
To our Chicagoans out there. They always refer to them as soups, right? Or supers.
Soups. Yes. Superpowered individuals.
Or, you know, that's why they had to call it the show Heroes, not Superheroes, right? I don't know if that's true. I'm making that up.
Heroes is a better name than Superheroes, though, you have to admit.
But also, they did not call them superheroes in the show Heroes.
No, also, they weren't superheroes. They were all kind of just bumbling dipshits.
Yeah, none of them were truly, like, heroic, but they did have superpowers.
Yeah,
at least one of them was a supervillain, like, right?
Yeah, Siler? One of them was a supervillain, for sure. And that guy did save the cheerleader, which I believe saved the world. Am I getting that right?
I think that's what the commercial told me, right? Save the cheerleader, save the world.
It's been a long time since Heroes.
We've gone through a few different writer strikes since then.
Yeah, no kidding. I can't wait for the next one. Yeah, I don't understand what's happening here, and it dovetails very nicely with my number two. Remember when I said I had two of them?
Oh boy, yeah, you have two of them here.
This is very closely related. In fact, if I'm not wrong, this one is also an MGM production.
Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Still out there fucking up the world.
Yeah, weird. How are they getting in on all this shit? I watched The Lord of the Rings: The Rings of Power.
Oh wow, okay.
Wow.
You're getting in on the controversial show.
Whoa.
Oh boy.
You heard of this one?
I bet you have lots of opinions about certain things if I go by other discourse around this show I've seen online.
Ask me if I've read The Silmarillion.
No one's read The Silmarillion.
I'm not reading that.
Yeah, that's
You kidding me?
That's the only logical response to that question. I tried to read The Silmarillion in high school, and I said, fuck that. I need to get laid instead.
You didn't do that either.
Nope.
I didn't bring yourself to
but
do either
I
one.
Still did not read The Silmarillion,
nope,
so
still never
that's positive.
Got still never got back around to that. Did not boomerang back to reading that one. Fuck that. I'm not going to read that shit. God damn. And I like the books.
Well, I mean, from everything I've heard, the show doesn't really have much to do with The Silmarillion anyway.
No, they do name drop The Silmarils, which I guess could be confusing if you don't know what The Silmarillion even is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They drop that word as if it's like super meaningful, but it's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Well, I find it interesting because from the way I understand it, and the way that they've acquired these rights to do a show from the Tolkien estate, they do not have the rights to The Silmarillion. They only have the rights to adapt certain appendices that were added after the fact to The Silmarillion by Christopher Tolkien.
Yes, in fact, there is a credits card drop that says based on The Lord of the Rings and appendices.
Yes.
Which is very funny. Mm-hmm. It's a very funny thing to put in there.
Right up there with inspired by.
Yeah. One of these Tolkien bros is working on the project, though. He has a big credit, a creative consultant or something like that.
Oh, like they're name dropping a Tolkien for cred on there?
Yeah. One of those ones. Maybe it's Chris. Maybe it's, is there a Simon?
Well, Christopher Tolkien's dead now, so it's probably not him. So
probably not him. Maybe it's Simon. I can't quite remember.
God, that just reminds me of the, you know, the joke in the Flying Hellfish episode of The Simpsons about them recovering, like, the lost European art, and then the shithead grandson is like, yeah, just throw it in the trunk. I've got a Kraftwerk show to go to.
Yeah.
That's what's going on here.
It does feel like that. Oh, you want Grandpa's characters? Fine, whatever.
Fuck, I don't even know what a Cimmerian is.
Yeah, can I go to the Hollywood parties? Then, yeah, sure, use whatever the fuck you want. I don't care.
Can I hang out with Bezos?
Middle Earth, right? The humans and dwarves and elves, right? Those are cool. People love that shit.
Yeah. What, another check from New Line? Thanks. Just put it over there.
There's not much to say about this show. I think the most notable thing that I came across was there is a scene of an orc, an Uruk, breastfeeding an Uruk baby.
Okay, there's a lot. I don't know. Nope. I'm not going to get into Tolkien lore splaining on this show.
That stopped me in my tracks. That was a wild one. Now there's a little bit of context there because it is about like one of the storylines in it is that one of the corrupted elves is in this, and his whole thing is that he's Big Daddy Uruk. And his main character motivation is that he is fighting to free the Urukai from, like, being enslaved. He wants them to, like, not be slaves, I guess. That's his whole thing.
Okay, so
seems to be going about it in a weird way.
Are they're finally trying to address the issue of, I guess, more the problem of ontologically evil races?
What can we do about the problem like Uruk? but they're not that serious about it because they are still like drooling, monstrous, deformed freaks who are clearly low intelligence and bloodthirsty and every other bad possible thing you could think about an orc. Like, this is very superficial attempt. The only other notable thing about this show is besides like just being like, hey, Sauron's in this and he's like a guy and we're gonna see him doing stuff, which is weird. It's a weird, again, another weird choice.
Is he sexy?
He's pretty sexy.
All right.
You know, people might disagree with me, but I think he starts off sexy and then he becomes not sexy. He gets less sexy.
His sexy meters go down as time goes on.
Yeah, he starts off as kind of, he's got like, he's kind of a scruffy brunette. He's got a little bit of a, you know, kind of unkempt bad boy energy to him. He's looking pretty good. And then he does a costume change where he's like an elf now, and he has this really ridiculous long blonde wig on, and he's clean shaven, and they gave him the pointy ears, and he just looks like a dork.
Well, you know, he is a seducer type, right?
Yeah.
He's got to get in there. I always assumed he had some kind of superficial shape-shifting ability. To look like a sexy version of whoever he's trying to con, right? It's got to be useful.
That is the really funny part, is that he doesn't shapeshift. He literally like does a costume change and comes out with a different wig on.
It would be so great if they just showed that quite literally, just like he walks into a closet and then comes back out and he's adjusting a wig.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, hey, who are you? Where did the other guy go?
That is very similar to what happens. I mean, it is kind of a fun effect where he's pretending to just be a dude. And then he realizes it would be better if he was like tricking this guy by pretending to be a messenger from the Valar, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he emerges from a furnace and he is now an elf. But they do this cool effect where he looks like he is angelic, and there's this beautiful like cloud, you know, typical kind of Renaissance painting angel background to him. And it kind of fades as like an effect he's doing, which is cool. I really like that effect. It's a little cheesy, but, you know, I get it. I get what he's going for. Right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a virtuous angel come to guide your hand back onto the straight and narrow kind of thing. It's fun, but he does just look like a dork in a big long dressing gown, kind of he's got a dressing gown like he's going to bed, and his long flat straight awful elf wig. It just, he looks like a fucking dork. It's bad even if it's intentional.
I would love a scene of him trying to like do that in the Shire. And the hobbits are just like, hey, get out of here, you fop. We don't need that shit.
Foppish Sauron.
Yeah.
There is also, I mean, in that vein as well, there is also...
the Chad Hobbit.
Hobbits are not allowed to be Chad.
No, come on.
They are like ontologically un-Chad-like. That is the thrust of the show. Because we are in like primeval times, so hobbits don't even like... There is no Hobbiton, right? They're still like a migratory clan, roaming about with their caravans.
The Schmeagles.
Yeah, that's how we get introduced to young Gandalf.
Young Gandalf.
We get a long young Gandalf. And now that there's in season two, young Gandalf does meet up with Tom Bombadil.
Ugh.
Tommy B. Who surprisingly...
He sounds like a member of the 90s BK Kids Club. Hey, kids, watch out. It's Radical Tommy B.
It's Old Tom. He calls himself Old Tom. Old Tom, real Old Tom. Dead Tom.
Dead Tom, yeah. Dead Tom's dead. Sauron shot him.
Yeah. Tom, Big Tommy B, the red-headed elder, is being played by Rory Kinnear.
Okay. Have I seen him in other... places?
Almost assuredly. The man gets around. He was on The Thick of It, the original one. Do you see that? I'm sure you've seen The Thick of It,
oh,
right?
Oh, of course. You know what? I do know Rory Kinnear. He was on...
He did an episode of Black Mirror, which you probably saw. He's been in a couple of the recent James Bond movies.
What was that Taika Waititi pirate show?
Oh, Our Flag Means Death.
Yes, he was on the second season of Our Flag Means Death. He was in Men.
Yes.
Did you see
Men?
Yes,
he was in Men. He, Yeah, he plays a billion different characters in Men.
Mm-hmm.
He's great. He's really funny, but he has such a bizarre face. Not somebody I would have picked out for Tom Bombadil, but then again, I never would have put Tom Bombadil as a recurring character in a television show, so what do I know?
I would never would have put Tom Bombadil in the book to begin with.
It's weird, though. It's weird. Yeah, young Dumbledore training with an old Tom. Old Tommy B.
You mean young Gandalf?
Yeah, what did I say?
You said Dumbledore.
Did I say Dumbledore? Yes. He has that energy, though. It really is. Come on. You can't blame me for that. Now, what would you, if I just told you, hey, they're making a Lord of the Rings show, it's going to be a TV show. What do you think the first, what would the problem, the first problem that jumps to mind be for you?
Well, I guess the first problem that jumped to mind for me would be that they already did a multiple Academy Award winning film series. And so I don't really need this. Like, I don't really see the need to continue its presence in the pop culture sphere. They kind of did their thing. And then, you know, they did the Hobbit movies, which I guess made money, but were not good movies and did not win awards.
No, people didn't really like those for good reasons.
Yeah. And then they did this, which I don't think anybody was asking for to begin with. So,
well, in between season one and season two, they also released that Golem video game.
Oh, right, right. And, yeah, you know, they made that announcement about a Gollum spinoff movie, too.
Yep, yep. And before this TV show, and, geez, maybe in the middle of the Hobbit filming or whatever, they did release those two Shadow of Mordor games.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, which I kind of liked. I liked those.
I don't know. They were okay. Good. I'm still pretty resentful against WB for that first one for, you know, copywriting the very cool nemesis system of like evolving recurring bad guys.
Yeah. You shouldn't be able to copyright video game mechanics.
That's
how
we, I
don't think that's a hot take.
That's how we lost mini games during loading screens.
Fucking psychos.
I mean, we would have lost them eventually because there aren't really loading screens in games anymore.
I'm not angry about that.
I'm not angry about it, but...
Not angry.
But it's still a dick move, I guess, is the overall takeaway there.
On principle, it's sort of like, what if after Super Mario 64, Nintendo patented 3D games?
I think that's a bit too broad, right? I don't think that
okay,
could
what
stick.
What if they had patented jumping?
If Mario had patented double jumping, that would have been the end of video games. That would have been the end right there. So
it would have been tough. Well, my problem when I initially heard, I differ from you a little bit here. When I initially heard there was going to be a Lord of the Rings TV show, my first thought was Lord of the Rings on television. A television seems too small.
Oh, okay.
For Lord of the Rings.
You're the David Lynch, if you watched a movie on your phone, no, you haven't.
Wasn't that Steven Soderbergh?
No, I think that was David Lynch. He was going off on people watching movies on their phones.
Yeah.
That's where the get real quote comes from. I love that shit.
Oh, that's pretty funny. You know what I was thinking of? Steven Soderbergh shot a movie on his phone. I think that's what I was thinking.
Oh, yeah. And then David Lynch punched him in the face for it.
Man, that guy's got to calm down. He has, like, cancer or something from punching so many people.
Well, he's 90 years old. He smokes 3 packs a day. And he's just barely escaped the Me Too movement.
Yeah, that guy's got to calm down. Calm down, David. You've got your flowers. Now it's time to calm down. They forced you to make more Twin Peaks, and now it's done, and you can rest.
I don't think anybody forced him to do anything. I think Hollywood's been waiting for him to gracefully bow out into a shallow grave for 20 years now.
All right, Davey, it's time.
All right, enough of this David Lynch slander.
I kind of agree with him there. My thing was more of a schematic level of size.
Mm-hmm.
What made The Lord of the Rings so strange and eye-popping and I think really caught people's imaginations was how huge it was and how its ability to represent bigness? Is that a word?
Yes. Yes. And, you know, part of that is the locations that they shot in, you know, obviously.
Yep.
New Zealand is an amazing landscape with lots of different locations to all different climates.
Looks nice.
It looked great.
Shame about all those people.
Yeah, yeah, real bad. Sorry about the billionaire bunkers. That's our fault. But
we really shouldn't have shipped all those white people there. You know, I think we really messed up.
And the fact that, I guess, I don't know. I'll have to double check this. I don't know if Lord of the Rings was shot on film. Or if it was shot digitally.
Early 2000s?
Yeah.
Probably still shot on film.
Mm-hmm. I mean, definitely digital enhancements. You know, that's just how movies are made. But yeah, I think that a big screen, big wide aspect ratio is absolutely what you need to capture that vastness that you're talking about. And I don't think that doing it on an Amazon CG set is going to get you there.
Well, the CG set is definitely a problem, but I would say it's even more fundamental than that, in that Lord of the Rings was a scale project, not necessarily because of the aspect ratio, but also because everything was big.
Mm-hmm.
It was clashes of civilization. It was armies and massive armies, hundreds of thousands of characters on screen.
And this is people talking in quiet voices in rooms.
And this is close to mid shots of people talking. When they try to portray scale, let's say, you know, the big plot aspect of this is like the people of Numenor, right? And the queen of Numenor decides to ride to the aid of the Middle Earth men, right? Except when they get down to it, the Middle Earth men is like one village. 40 people, maybe.
It's just like some guys.
Yes, that's all of the Southlands is like 40 guys. And when the Numenoreans show up, it's like three boats worth of dudes. You know what I mean?
That's not a lot.
There's only like 8 people and they're all having conversations together. And whenever something monumental happens, it's one of those 8 people it's happening to.
I've seen the same extra in every shot for like 5 times now.
If something happens to the elves, we only have 4 elves that it's going to happen to.
Oh, man.
If something happens to men, there's only 6 men it's going to happen to.
Being the continuity supervisor on that set must be awful.
It must be terrible. And the plot itself is just a character going, I need to go to... I need to go to the Southlands. Oh, I'm in the Southlands. I need to go back to Linden. Oh, I'm in Linden and I'm having a conversation with the one other named elf. Oh, the named elf is telling me I need to go to Eregion. Oh, here I am in Eregion. I need to go back to the Southlands. Here I am in the Southlands having a conversation with the third named elf. It's like you have an maybe insurmountable problem with scale here.
Mm-hmm.
And they make no attempt to really address it. So it becomes incredibly pathetic when a quote-unquote army of like 20 dudes fights another army of 20 dudes, and that's supposed to be the big historical battle that determines the fate of all Middle Earth.
You know, this is the same problem that they were running into near the end of Game of Thrones when they were running out of steam on that show, right? It felt like every conflict was the same, like 7 or 8 main characters in a room.
Yeah,
and they just had to push off nameless hordes from outside a door that we don't get to see behind.
Yes, exactly. Small world problem, right?
Yeah.
We've talked about this.
Yes.
Small world problem.
And, you know, part of it is a budget issue. Part of it is a production scale issue. Obviously, you're not going to have the same time or resources available or, you know, taken for granted on a film set. Or on a TV set that you would for a big production like Lord of the Rings was, right? You know, Lord of the Rings had 3 years of pre-production just making the props that they were going to use for the movie.
Sure.
This is...
They invented an entire production technique.
Yes.
Multiple production techniques just for that movie.
Yeah. You know, big shout out to Studio Weta. They did some absolutely amazing work for that movie.
And for the Halo project that got canceled.
No shout outs to the Halo project that didn't get canceled.
Yeah, unfortunately, what happened there? Damn. Not going to talk about that. That's not the fan culture we're dissing on. We're talking about Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, okay.
Those problems, I definitely agree. There's also the problem of just straight up scripting. I'm thinking about Lord of the Rings. I'm thinking about the Fellowship itself. I'm thinking that essentially that's what, eight dudes? Let's count
them
off.
Nine dudes.
Gandalf, he's a big one.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Frodo.
Yeah,
had a great post Lord of the Rings career. We had Mary, very fun fan favorite on Lost.
Yeah,
we had Pippin. Did he do anything else?
Well,
ever?
Mary and Pippin are really a package deal, and they're kind of, you know, they're the bad boys of the group.
The bad boys, yeah. They count as one guy.
Yeah, I don't know if they count as one guy, but they're definitely. It's like, you know, they take up two slots in the party, but you got to have Merry with Pippin. They give each other invaluable bonuses.
Yeah, sure. There is a synergy bonus there. We've got, what is that for? We've got Legolas,
mm-hmm.
Sexy elf.
Well, he's the DEI hire.
we've got Gimli. He's a dwarf.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got the token man. What's his name?
Boromir.
Yeah. And that's what? That's seven?
No, you left
seven people?
You left out Aragorn. Forgot about him.
Oh, right. Yeah. Right.
He's kind of important.
The horse guy. Right.
And you forgot about Sam.
Who?
Samwise Gamgee.
Who is that?
The gaffer's boy.
Which one was that guy?
You know.
I thought there were three hobbits.
No, there are four hobbits.
Are you sure?
You know what? This is Sean Astin erasure, and I'm not going to stand by for it.
Sean Astin, the Goonies guy.
Yes,
right.
The Goonies. Come
yes.
on. Adopted son of John Astin, famous television actor.
Yeah, he did that series. He did that season of Stranger Things. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I do vaguely remember him being in a couple scenes. Yes.
No, I will not stand by for any Sam slander on this show or any. No.
But
you can count me out of this bit, sir.
But the magic trick is taking those nine guys, right, and making that world feel incredibly huge
mm-hmm.
when it's really mostly those nine guys.
Well, no, I think that's not exactly what's doing it. The world is huge. I think what drives the point home is the fact that we're just following these nine guys, and you know, four of them are quite literally small guys.
They're little tiny guys
in the face of these insurmountable giant like things that they have to overcome, right? That's part of the appeal of the quest of the ring, is this small band of people banding together to save the world from a giant evil. And that is reflected by, you know, the mountains that they have to go through, the monsters they fight, the hordes of ontologically evil orcs.
The darkness.
Yeah. The Balrog takes their angel from them. Their sweet Gandalf man.
Yeah, he makes a cameo appearance.
The Balrog does?
Yeah, yeah. He makes a cameo appearance in the show.
Now they're just pandering.
he's an important character. Anyway, my point was just that they're very clever in the scripting of that those movies, and that they are very good at tricking us into making that world feel colossal, even though we are following a very small group of people's stories throughout that world. And this show is trying to do a similar thing, but they fail on just every time it needs to step up. It fails because it's a TV show.
I mean, I don't think that is inherently a flaw of the television format, because if we go back...
I do.
I mean, you can say that, but I think the first season...
I am saying
the that. First several seasons of Game of Thrones... You know, when it was still considered good, they do just fine portraying scale in those.
Right, but they had source material.
Oh, okay, there it
and
is.
And a golden age of television style production budget.
Well, I mean, I can't argue that the golden age of prestige television is on the outs. That is...
The age of elves is over, and now we are in the age of man.
Married with kids, toilet flush.
Oh, God. Okay, all right, all right. That's the fan culture absolute dismissal that we need to get out of the way every episode.
Now I have a lot of anime that I want to talk about that we need to get out of that we need to get ahead of here. So I suggest we take a quick break and then get back to it with some anime.
All right.
And here we are, once again, Anime Death Spiral. So, Remy, we didn't acknowledge in the first half.
He didn't warn me he was going to do that.
No, I like to keep him on his toes.
I didn't approve of that.
We didn't mention in the first half that we are now, of course, officially in... You want to take a guess what I'm about to say?
Oh, yeah, of course. You're right. I totally forgot. There's like new anime.
Well, I was going to say we're officially in spooky season.
Oh,
it's October 1st here. That means the skeletons are out dancing and the pumpkins are out pumpkining. I don't know what they
smashing.
Do. Yeah, bashing.
They smash.
Smashing pumpkins. Smiling politely.
These pumpkins be smashing.
And kids are leaving trails of candy like snails everywhere they go. And, of course, that also means that surely as the sun sets, surely as the moon rises every night, the seasons change, and a new crop of anime come out for us to evaluate.
That's true.
And I bring this up because one of the first premieres in this season happens to be one of the little title that I've been looking forward to for a long time.
Little tiny title.
Little tiny title called... adaptation of Junji Ito's Uzumaki anime for Adult Swim.
As previously mentioned, one of the first shots across the bow of fall 2024 television anime, fall season of 2024 anime is Uzumaki on not HBO,
but Max.com or Max the app.
Max app.
Previously, you would have been able to find this on adultswim.com, but that no longer exists. That just redirects to Max.
That is not a thing. That is just a logo. You know, just how like WB, I don't know if they've retired it yet, but you know how WB, their mascot was Michigan J. Frog for a long time?
I remember that.
Yeah, yeah.
Is Michigan J. Frog, he's not woke anymore, I don't think. I think we canceled him.
I don't think Michigan J. Frog was ever woke. I don't think that was part of his characterization. He was a dancing frog.
Yes, that's true.
But now that we're just Max, WB is really, again, more of a sublimated branding. Max seems to be what they're driving at. Do you think we could get like Max Headroom as the new mascot for the app? Maybe.
Man, I don't think fucking anybody knows who that is or what you're referencing anymore.
Max Headroom? Really? Is he completely gone?
Yeah, I don't think Zoomers know who Max Headroom is.
He's completely gone from the public consciousness.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a shame.
I barely am aware of what Max Headroom was or is. Like, I remember that story from the 90s about the television hackers that took over, you know, a bunch of cable channels and broadcast, like, a Max Headroom puppet. You remember hearing about that?
That was sort of the idea, yeah.
I don't know. Maybe keep thinking on a new mascot. That's all I'm saying.
I just think it would be really fun if you logged in to Max one day and they did play a sort of like homage to the signal hijacking. I think that would be cool. I mean, ultimately it would be soulless corporate propaganda, but at least do something fun with it, you know?
I don't know. Sometimes as I grow older, sometimes I appreciate them just being straight up
no nonsense, just
yeah,
evil.
No nonsense, openly evil.
Are there any other famous Maxes?
Well, Max Power from The Simpsons.
Max Power. Okay, yeah. Sure. Goofy's son was named Max.
Yeah, sure.
In the Goofy movie.
Mighty Max was a 90s cartoon character. He was the male branded equivalent to the Polly Pocket toy line, if you remember.
I do remember Polly Pocket, yeah. For sure. I had one of those.
Well, there's a little known boy-oriented, boy-marketed version called Mighty Max, where instead of, you know, little domestic setups like in Polly Pocket, the toys would open up into these weird little sci-fi fantasy scenarios or whatever.
I mean, I think that's cool, frankly.
It's kind of cool, sure.
I'm kind of down with that.
You know, there was a cartoon where he had a wizard chicken friend.
Wizard chicken.
Yeah.
I guess I'm kind of down with that. That's all right. Wizard chicken.
A wizard who was a chicken.
Check this shit out. You remember Sky Dancers?
Wait, are we already moving on from Uzumaki?
No, check this shit out.
Okay.
You remember Sky Dancers?
No, I don't remember Sky Dancers.
You don't remember Sky Dancers. They were the winged kind of fairy toys,
yes,
that you would spin,
yes,
in your hand.
You know what? I do.
And they would fly up.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what they did?
What?
They spiraled. Yeah.
Oh, you can't just do that. You're going to spook me now.
Think about
it. You just can't bring up spirals.
You got to think about it. They spiraled.
Hey, you know what else spiraled?
What?
Spirographs.
That is true. Yes. Yeah, sacred geometry.
Mm-hmm. Think about it.
Yeah, that is interesting. I guess that's an angle I'd never considered before. You think the spiral is sacred geometry?
Kind of lump sacred geometry in with, like, you know, crystal sunning and bone throwing.
Yeah, Holy Mountain.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a cool movie. Cool movie, man.
That fucking rocks.
Fucking rules.
Wish he'd done Dune.
Yeah.
God damn, I wish he'd done Dune.
Oh, man.
Spiral. Spiral, the Max show, anime show. It's based on a comic by Jinji Ito.
You may have heard of him.
It's one of his more popular ones, for sure. They've done it before.
Well, it's...
I did not watch that one.
Was there a previous animation adaptation of Uzumaki? I know there's the early 2000s film one, which was not a great movie, but I've talked a little bit on here before about some of the things that they did in it that I did like visually.
I do like that live action one. I am pro live action Uzumaki.
Yeah, I think it's weird.
It's fun.
You know, they do some weird camera stuff and some cool practical effects. You know, yeah, fuck it, why not? It's 90 minutes, so it's good in my book.
Yeah, a 90 minute movie could never be evil.
Yeah. So this current adaptation that just aired yesterday, I believe, on HBO's Max. This was done by Production IGs.
We get paid
IGs.
By the mention, by the way.
Yeah,
we should
it's
be
true.
We should be up front.
Yeah, a nickel per mention.
Yeah.
It's Dickensian publishing rules.
It's more than we make per play of this.
Absolutely. Oh, thousands and thousands of times more.
Oh, yeah.
And so this is done by Production IG, so I think that's probably a pretty good sign to begin with. You know, did you watch the first episode? I did.
I watched the first episode of Uzumaki, and I was extremely relieved because it was good.
It was really good. Now,
okay, it was good.
Okay, so there's some things that I wanted to get off my head about it. So first off,
get off your head.
Yeah, first off,
yeah,
it is an extremely faithful adaptation. Like, we're talking straight page to screen, like, composition.
Yes. Something we've made our pretty clear in the past we don't actually care about, but yes.
We don't care that much about it, but I feel like, especially with this, and especially with the track record that animated Junji Ito, like, stories have had in the past, which is, for
sure,
the most part, like, not great. They've done several,
yeah,
like,
not great.
They've done several collections. The first few looked really bad. I've seen them. They're not good. And then, you know, previously they did that Netflix show. You remember that from last year, I think?
Yep, yep.
And I thought that was actually
very good.
I don't know. I thought it looked okay in some episodes and not so okay in others.
Okay.
So it was a mixed bag. This one, they are putting so much effort into trying to accurately recreate Junji Ito's style on the screen that they have resorted to basically just using stenciled backgrounds and using that kind of like a 2D comic filter over 3D models to just put his drawings on like a rigged 3D model and just animate it that way. And I don't think it looks bad. I don't think it looks bad. I want to be clear about that. I think it actually looked really good in most of the episode. It got kind of weird in some of the more action-heavy segments. You could really tell the, I don't know how to describe it, but like the 3D-ness of it.
There, it's like, it's motion capture.
Yeah. It's rotoscoping. It's a lot of rotoscoping animation.
They use motion capture.
Or, you know, I mean, it is motion capture, but that's what rotoscoping basically is. It gives you the same effect.
I guess it kind of is,
with what they're doing here.
It is sort of the same thing.
And you know what I really liked? What I kept thinking about the entire time I was watching the episode? It looks exactly, almost exactly like that game Cryptmaster.
Yeah, it kind of does. It has a really interesting use of the grayscale.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool.
And I really love that it's grayscale, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
I just want to just really drive that home. I don't think anime needs to be in color. I think black and white is actually totally fine.
Specifically, it's one of the things that I always thought was an issue with these Ito adaptations is that I think the grayscale and black and white shading that he does in his art style is integral to what makes it it's essential to what makes it like so scary and like emotionally resonating, right? I think it's a big part of why his style works.
Yes, I think there is a sort of power in black and white, specifically for horror stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd say that another, you know, if you're talking about video game references, if anybody's played World of Horror, extremely Junji Ito influenced.
Mm-hmm.
Also really great use of black and white in like pixel animation form, which I think is also really fantastic.
Hell yeah.
There is some interesting stuff in that the director has said they are going to have surprises not in the original work. So we are not exactly doing a one-to-one.
We're doing an Uzumaki remake?
Yeah, we're doing some deviations somewhere here.
I cannot wait for the Time Ghost Police to show up.
Yeah. I guess I should go back and reread it to spot those out. Get my Easter egg on, right?
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I think I can pretty confidently say that I'm going to be following this one all the way to the end. Unless they go completely off the rails in a way that I just cannot get behind. Like, it's already a foregone conclusion that I'm here for some Junji Ito.
Yeah. What if like a superpower team shows up?
Yeah, I was like, what if they do like a super, super happy magical girl ending or something?
Yeah, I was thinking like Shuichi takes the powers of the spiral and like has a shonen arc where he learns to control it.
Like Naruto?
Yes. That would be very funny to
me. Wait, his name was Uzumaki. God damn it.
I do want to say, there is a very interesting, and I we've talked about this a little bit because we've gone over like horror anime and we've talked about how little like actual horror anime there is that doesn't just turn into like horror action.
Sure.
We've talked a little bit about this.
Like the blood, series and stuff like that and Hellsing.
Yeah. A lot of stuff is horror themed, but ends up being more like action-y stuff. I remember thinking, I really liked Summertime Rendering.
Uh-huh.
I talked a little bit about that. The kind of time repeat, death repeat show.
Sure.
That becomes very like weird, occult, eldritch horror stuff. But then pivots really hard to like anime fighting the Eldritch Horror, and it's like, wait, hold on a second. Come on, you guys. Didn't make me hate the show or anything, but it was a little bit of a letdown. And the director of Uzumaki, in an interview, straight up said, horror anime, it's not that horror anime isn't trendy, but when it's drawn by a human hand and done in the medium of anime, it makes it more obvious that it's fiction and that it's not taking place, so I don't think anime is very suited for horror.
I could see that argument, but it is doing a disservice to an audience, right? I don't know. The way I see it is horror, if you're watching a horror anime or a horror movie or anything, right?
Sure. Let's say Uzumaki, for example.
Say Uzumaki. You're already there to experience a specific emotion. You're there to experience the horror. And I think that trumps the suspension of disbelief, right?
Sure. That you bought the ticket, you're going to take the ride.
Yeah, it doesn't matter to me that it's animated. I'm already here for a specific reason.
Sure. I think his answer is interesting because it touches on the use of the uncanny in horror, which is something I've been thinking a lot about after watching a lot of horrors. Shout out to The Substance, by the way. I just think it's very interesting that the director of Uzumaki specifically says, like, anime is not really suited for horror.
Yeah, seems to be kind of tripping yourself up there, right?
Yeah, I don't hate it. If that motivates him to do something interesting, then great. I liked the first episode quite a lot, so it's not like I'm doubting his ability. What's the scariest anime?
Oh, God.
Wow. This is a tough one.
I don't know. Perfect Blue, I guess?
Perfect Blue. It's an interesting choice. You know, I would have said something like I thought Shiki was very scary,
mm-hmm.
in that it is more of an existential dread kind of horror. The monsters themselves aren't terrifying, but the feeling of absolute desolation and death creeping through a tiny village, which is a main theme in a lot of Japanese horror, right? Is really, really well done and cheeky. Also mirrors what I really like about a lot of J-horror live-action stuff. You know, I was thinking about Pulse a lot recently. You know, Pulse and Cure, specifically, both of those movies I find to be, like, very scary. But Pulse...
Yeah, but those aren't anime.
They're not anime, but they... Pulse, very specifically, is about the way that, like... the world is just draining of people.
Well, no, I would have had a much different answer if you said, what's the scariest Japanese movie?
No, but I mean the anime, and that's why I said cheeky.
Okay, all right.
I would also say, you know, there are parts, even though I don't necessarily like all of it, I do think Higurashi no Naka Kuro ni, of course, there are parts of that I do find, like, really effective. Jeez, what else? Well, if I had more time to think about it, I would go down the list. But let's move on.
Let's move on. Have you watched any of the other anime that's premiered yet?
Legally, no.
Okay. Well, I've watched one other legal premiere so far.
Okay.
I watched Let This Grieving Soul Retire. And...
what the fuck is that?
I had no idea what I was getting into. It was one of the few things that has premiered. You know, only a handful of stuff is out this season so far. And this is one of them. So I thought I'd give it a try. And
why did you stop on this one?
Well, because it was a choice between this and tying the knot with an Amagami sister. And I'm really up to my eyes with trash romance right now. So,
oh God.
You know, I had to go with the trash non-isekai fantasy story. And I'm going to be honest, I didn't hate everything about this. Now let me try and get you on the premise here. This is your standard... non-isekai setting, you know, where it is just a fantasy world, a Dragon Quest like fantasy world with the classes and levels and powers and all that stuff, right? But the gimmick is that it's not a video game that anyone's been transported into. It's just how the world works for some reason.
Just how the world is. The world is systematized.
Yeah, the world is systematized in an easily mathable way. And that's just normal, and no one questions
nothing,
it.
Yeah, nothing philosophically terrifying about that.
And so what this is we have our main character. His name is Cry Agni, is his name.
Cry Agni?
Yeah, yep.
Awesome.
And
awesome.
And so we start off the episode, him and he's a child and his five other friends all make a pact with each other to grow up and be famous hunters, which are what they call professional adventurers, right? Treasure hunters.
Protagonists.
Yes, professional protagonists.
Okay.
And we're all going to grow up and we're going to go to the capital and we're going to join the best clan and we're going to become famous monster hunters. And, you know, we get a flash forward. And now we're in the capital, and it's been announced that all of the best monster hunting clans are holding tryouts for new beginners.
Wait, what?
Yeah, or they're all seeking new members, and they're having tryouts.
There's open casting calls.
Yep, organized open casting calls.
Oh my god. Okay.
And so we go in and we see these two people in line to get in to the guild hall or whatever, I guess. And, you know, one of their adventures, and they're saying like, yeah, I'm a level 3. I'm here. I'm going to get on the best team and I'm going to make it. And we're focusing on this one guy who's, you know, clad in a hood. We don't get to see his face.
Cool.
We go through all the bullshit and of... Like, they get inside and, you know, I'm trying to remember her name. The person that the hooded man is talking to in line is a woman who's come from the countryside, and she wants to make it in the city and be a famous hunter or whatever.
Sure. Who doesn't?
And she strikes up a rivalry with another person, a jerk in line, who says, hey, you're a woman. You can't be a hunter. I'm a big, strong guy, and I'm gonna get the spot, not you, right?
Compelling argument.
Yes. And we get inside, and wouldn't you know? It's revealed that the guy in the hood is actually the best hunter in the city. He's the leader of the most famous clan. And also, he's the grown-up version of one of the little kids that we saw from the intro. And so here's where we get the premise laid out for us. His whole thing is that he's not a good hunter. He doesn't have, like, cool powers or skills or, like, weapons or anything.
Uh-huh.
He's just really good at, like, bullshitting and lying.
Uh-huh.
And so with that, he has in a mysterious Captain Tyler-esque way kind of failed his way up to the top spot in the Hunters Guild.
Wow, this is the most real shit in this fantasy world so far.
And it turns out that, you know, the best clan in the city that's holding tryouts today, that's his team of little kids friends that we saw from the beginning as well. They all grew up and they all made it, and they're all the best hunters in the land, except him. He just kind of bullshits his way through everything. And the catch on top of that is that, like, he doesn't want to be doing this. He's just doing it because all of his friends are doing it.
Oh, extremely relatable.
Yeah. And so he's like, the joke that we get throughout the episode is that he's constantly trying to find ways to quit doing, like, his job of being a famous monster hunter, or pawn off his responsibilities to lackeys or employees or whatever, or fans. And everyone just kind of takes it at face value that he's being, like, somehow either super, like, he's like a super mastermind grand planner, or he's just being super modest when he says that he's afraid to go fight that giant monster over there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And so it's kind of like, I don't know, a reverse One Punch Man scenario where everyone in the world has just bought in to this collective myth that he is the greatest hunter in the city, and he's super powerful and can destroy anyone with a single punch. And he just kind of goes along with it because it's easier that way.
Yeah. You're talking about King.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. He's doing a King from One Punch Man.
He's doing
exactly that bit. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Sure. A classic setup.
Yeah. And so,
is it funny?
I don't know. I don't know if it's funny or if I don't know if I just yeah. laugh because I wasn't expecting that going in.
Yeah.
I was really expecting something more like bog standard power fantasy. But this is literally just a dude who, wants to fuck off and like not talk to people. He's extremely misanthropic, which makes him very relatable to me.
Yes, interesting.
So, I don't know.
That sounds actually like a lot like another show that's premiering. That sounds much worse than that.
What is that show?
That's the isekai, I just want to be left alone in another world show, whatever that one's called.
Okay.
So, did you like this one? Are you going to continue watching this one?
I will give it exactly one more episode, but there were issues that I can already see that are going to be a problem, like the extremely male-gazy camera setup they have, where every shot featuring a female character, who, by the way, they all wear hot pants for some reason, like unilaterally.
Oh, yeah. Of course.
The camera is always centered behind them and at butt level to really accentuate the hot pants.
Who likes short shorts?
Yeah. I feel like maybe they had a clever idea and they are not going to utilize it to the extent I want them to. And maybe, in fact, this is just going to be more of them doing the thing they say they're making fun of.
An anime story as old as time.
Yep. So I don't know. I don't know. We'll come back to that one.
All right. We'll talk about that one. Let's get through this list here, because we've got some premieres coming up, and I know you want to list out what to look out for and what to avoid, and obviously our opinions are unimpeachable, so why don't we just dive in here?
All right, you want to do I'll do one, you do one thing?
Let's do it.
Okay.
I'm going to go with the first very obvious one, and that is Dandadan.
Hell yeah, baby.
I really don't even need to say anymore. Frankly, if it was more convenient for me to go and see the first episode in theaters, which they're doing around town, not around my town, but maybe around yours, I would do that for sure. I'm extremely excited. Again, I'm very interested to see what the reaction is going to be, but I'm in for the long haul. Let's fucking go.
Yeah, hell yeah. Now, in the same vein, I am going to go with the Ranma 1/2 remake is coming out.
Yes.
Soon as well. We've talked about that. I believe that from what I've seen in the trailers, the animation looks pretty good, and I think it'll be a good spot for me to jump into this this classic story.
Now's the perfect. Never been a better time to jump into.
Yeah, 2024 Ranma is the year of Ranma 1/2.
Yeah, now that's a MAPPA show.
Yeah. Oh hell yeah.
Yeah.
You know, gotta keep those people employed somehow, right?
If you let them drop the pencil for even a second, they might escape.
Well, they cease to exist when they're not being enslaved.
Nate is a Ranma noob. I am a Ranma diehard classic who had Ranma on VHS. We are equally levels of excited. Let's fucking go.
Hell yeah.
Mine is, the next one is a little weird. This is the return of Blue Exorcist.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They did an original anime run, a Full Metal Alchemist situation, except Blue Exorcist is not remotely as good as Full Metal Alchemist, and that first attempt was kind of trash. It faked its ending and kind of dipped. Then they revived it to do a limited arc. I think it was like the Hokkaido arc or whatever. I don't really remember
no,
what it
was. No, you're thinking of Rurouni Kenshin?
No, they did it for this, too.
Oh, shit. Everybody's going to Hokkaido. Yeah.
Everyone loves Hokkaido. Let's don't even. So this is another one. This one's called Beyond the Snow Arc or Saga or whatever. I, for whatever reason, have some kind of affection for Blue Exorcist. I'm really not sure why. It's not very good. But I don't know. This is Studio Voln. I might give this one a shot.
You might give this one a shot.
Hard to truly recommend it, but I don't know. Maybe. If you're a fence sitter, I don't know. Check it out.
Okay, I'm going to go with Nega Posi Angler or Negative Positive Angler. You know what? I am endeared by the concept of an anime about fishing in the city. That seems just quaint. I don't know. There's a certain quality to kind of the pursuit of like pastoral hobbies in an urban setting, I think is a vibe that doesn't get explored enough. Rooftop gardens.
You like that?
I like that. I like that a lot.
You're into that?
Yeah.
It's got, to me, it's got, it kind of has like a Return vibe to it.
Return to Monkey.
That I'm a little uncomfortable with.
Yes, I get that, but it's not like they're doing the full Tyler Durden, like, Return to Caveman, like, let's turn cities into jungles kind of thing.
Sure.
This is just trying to find a connection back to nature in some way in an ever-expanding urban sprawl. Which is
sure.
Something we're all going to have to deal with eventually.
Eventually. You can't eat those fish, though.
No.
Do they know that?
You can't
eat those fish.
I mean, have you ever tried to eat a koi because they taste fucking disgusting?
Have you ever tried to eat a fish out of, like, I don't know, the Thames? You will die immediately.
Those police records are sealed, sir. Let's move on.
Okay, I've got one called Raisei wa Tanin ga Ii. This is called Yakuza Fiance. This is a very, like, steamy kind of bodice ripper.
Ooh, oh my
rom-com. Not a rom-com, a romance. It's sort of like, it's got sort of a 50 Shades of Grey thing kind of going on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure.
I assume that this is different than Way of the House Husband in tone.
There's a lot of abuse.
Well, that doesn't sound fun.
No, unless you're into that. That's kind of the thing is, like, if you're into that, then this is the one for you. I'm not sure I like Yakuza Fiance, but there is something that caught my attention when I first got over the manga. So I don't know. This is definitely an episode one.
Okay.
If you like steamy bodice ripping kind of shit, this is the show.
Okay. I am going to go with Yokai Gakko no Sensei Hajimeshita, which I don't know what the English translation of that is, but it is about a cowardly human substitute teacher getting called in to be the homeroom teacher for a class of monster kids.
Oh, yes.
And I mean that literally, not just like, oh, those kids are little monsters.
Yeah, not Onizuka.
No, not like
not
that.
GTO.
No, we have skeletons and ghouls and vampires and, I don't know, a ghost, maybe it looks like.
Yeah, I think there's a mummy.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. This seems lighthearted. It's probably not going to be good, but it can't be that bad, right? It can't be egregiously offensive.
I mean, you say that, but I don't know. I don't know how the anime will do it. I read a little bit of the first chapter of this, and it did start to seem like maybe the kids want to fuck the teacher.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
Okay, that's no good.
All right. Okay. Mine is called Demon Lord 2099. Now I assume this is sort of a Batman Beyond type thing, because the description sort of describes a future Shinjuku, sort of a cyberpunk Shinjuku. But also there's like a demon lord involved, so maybe like a cyberpunk demon lord kind of thing. Which I am not against. Cyberpunk Demon Lord? Sure, why not?
I can only assume that it's related to the Spider-Man 2099 continuity, in which case he goes to the future, to a world ruled by horrible animal men.
Are there demon lords in that?
Yeah, sure, why not? Yeah, I'm going to say yes.
Yeah, now this is by J.C. Staff, who did the very disappointing One Punch Man season 2, so...
Eek, oh, boy.
You know, expect the worst, hope for the best.
Yeah, I just want to say I'm inclined to give them just a little bit of grace, because I don't think One Punch Man season 2 looked awful, but comparing it to the absolute insanity of like the talent that came together to work on the first season, like, it's, come on, you don't go on second. You never want to go on second.
Yeah, give them a little bit of grace. I am definitely not as big a hater on that season as other people, but yeah, it is what it is.
All right, I am gonna go with Kekkon Surute Honto Desuka, or 365 Days to the Wedding. Now, this is about two loser, single, unmarried, and I cannot stress enough that they do not have romantic partners.
Ugh.
Yeah, I know, right? Disgusting.
Ugh, gross.
Absolutely disgusting.
Prison.
And in order to avoid both getting transferred overseas to countries that they don't want to move to, they have to pretend that they're getting married.
So this is Green Card, the Ryan Reynolds movie.
See, I was leaning more towards Spaced, the Edgar Wright TV show. But
sure, because they have to live together, you mean?
Well, I'm assuming they probably have to live together, and there's probably going to be some wacky hijinks. Probably not, you know, as snappy directed as Spaced was. But, you know, there's going to be some goof-ups, some mix-em-ups.
Right,
probably
right.
Some embarrassing scenarios. And then by the end of it, they're going to realize, well, maybe we do love each other. Maybe we should just get married.
Yeah, why not? I walked in on you in the shower like 50 times. Why don't we just hook up?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. This is again on the list for being one of the least offensive options.
That's how a lot of these boil down. Okay, my next one's pretty simple. It's After School Hanako-kun season 2. I happen to like the manga for Hanako-kun quite a lot. I think it's got a really unique art style, and for season 1 of the anime, at least, they translated that art style really well. So it just has a truly unique look to it that I really like. And this, I mean, this story's all right. At least look at some of the stuff in this show, because it's worth taking a look at. I think this is going to be cool.
Okay. All right, well, my second to last pick is Rekishi ni Nokuru Akujo ni Naruzo, or I'll Become a Villainess Who Goes Down in History.
Goes down in history.
Now, that's where the accent mark is. That's where you have to emphasize it. Now, Now, you were right. We were talking about this before the show when I was speculating on what this could be about. And you were right. This is a standard villainous story about a villainous noblewoman who comes from a family that excels in the dark arts. And there is a, you know, bookish admirer of hers that lives in the village down below the castle, who one day accidentally gets hit by a truck and reincarnates as the 7-year-old version of that noblewoman. And
nightmarish.
It is absolutely awful. But what I found interesting is I don't think I've ever seen an isekai or reincarnation fantasy where you reincarnate into the same reality that you already inhabit, and just like as another person that already existed.
Yeah.
Is that common? I don't know. You're more versed than I am in this.
It's not common, but it's not
unheard of.
unheard of. Yeah.
Okay.
It's happened a few times. You know what I see it sometimes is that's what starts off a like age reverse story, which I sometimes consider an isekai.
Like aging backwards, like Benjamin Button?
No, like you die or whatever.
Oh, you just get to relive your own life over again.
You go back to kid times.
Sure.
Except you have your adult brain, which makes you...
OP.
Well, OP, I guess. You're really good. You're the smartest fourth grader ever.
Hey, I am smarter than a fifth grader.
I am smarter. Damn, take that, Jeff Foxworthy. Did anybody ever watch that show?
Yeah, I don't know.
Those get into some dangerous territory very quickly, I will say. We don't need to get into that.
This is not strictly an episode one, but this is something that is out soon, so it'll at least be available.
Sure. All right, I have a quick one here. This one is called Chikyu no undo ni tsuite, or about the movement of the earth, comma, orb, colon, on the movements of the earth.
Okay.
This is an anime about a Polish boy.
Okay. Now, I'm right off
either
the bat...
Either you're sold by that or not.
Right off the bat, I'm worried about... what the Japanese perception of a Polish boy's experience could be.
Oh, yeah. No, that's kind of the selling point. Like, how are they going to translate that? Obsessed. There's some other stuff going on here, but who cares? It's either you're in from that description or you're out.
I mean, I'm intrigued if nothing else, so I guess I'm in.
Now, relating to your question earlier... I've got another one called Sayonara Ryusei, colon, Konnichiwa Jinsei, goodbye dragon life, hello human life, I guess. This is one I read the manga of. It's still ongoing. It's gotten very bad. It's not very good. It's gotten very, very bad. But this is an isekai where essentially a dragon, a great elder dragon dies and is reincarnated as a human in the same world at the same time.
Uh-huh.
And gets to just, like, live as, like, a chill human villager in a sort of fantasy world. As you can expect, once he's, like, you know, acceptable protagonist age, his life starts getting encroached upon by various adventures. It's all right. It's better than its contemporaries, I think, at least for the manga. He hooks up with a Lamia at one point, if you're into that.
I am into that.
Yeah. Crazy snake lady. I don't know. There's some fun stuff around, like, a guy being a dragon, being a secret dragon, and people, like, stepping to him and him being, like, secretly, like, this guy doesn't even know I'm an elder dragon. It's, you know, it's kind of funny.
That's what I say to myself all the time at the Magic tournament.
Yeah. This guy doesn't know I'm playing a toxic deck. Yeah, I don't know. it's like, whatever. I think this is an obligatory episode one for me because I have read so much of the manga. I kind of feel like I might as well watch the first episode. But I don't know. I don't have high hopes for this, but whatever. It is what it is. I've got the next one is...
Wait, I've got one more.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, this is... Okay, this is my last pick for the season, I think. But I'm going to go with Trillion Game.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Now...
That's a lot.
It's exactly 1,000 billions. Can you even comprehend how big that is?
What is that, like $1 million in American?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that?
Now, this is, for better or worse, appears to be like the anime version of that gif of Patrick Bateman walking through the office in American Psycho. It is about a super tall, mega buff, handsome Chad bro who's really good at talking to people and everyone loves him. And he's made $1 million already and he's really good at business. And he gets an offer, right? He gets an offer from the biggest bank in Japan. Dragon Bank.
Dragon Bank?
And they say, sir, Mr. Tanoji, sir, we want to give you all of our money. Won't you please come work for us so we can give you all of our dragon money, sir? And he says, fuck off. No, I don't need your small-time bucks. I'm going to go and I'm going to make $1 trillion U.S. dollars on my own. And then it's about him teaming up with a bookish, introverted, super genius IT engineer who makes the craziest, best-selling app that does stuff for people.
Cool.
And it's about them.
The everything app.
Yes. And it's about their upward spiral into being the first man to own $1 trillion.
What hole in his heart is he trying to fill?
I can only imagine, you know, the missing love of a parent, the lost love of a lover that he left behind. I don't know. I hope that the series ends with him getting visited by three ghosts.
Yeah, that would be a good turn. Or maybe he feeds a cat to an ATM.
Yeah, well, you can only go one of two ways.
Now, this is very funny to me. I mean, not that this is the most original plot line, but there is a manga I read a long time ago called Vikings Game, where essentially a douchebag VC guy does kind of the same thing by scouting a homeless, introverted, socially maladjusted, ultra 10x app developer programmer to do question mark things. Supposedly there's some kind of like justice angle involved in that one where he's not just trying to like hoard money. I think he is trying to like, I don't know, do like hunt financial criminals possibly or something like that. But it is essentially kind of the same thing. In that one, the maladjusted introvert, super 10x programmer constantly fucks up the product though, because he's like, it could be better if I just do this on my own, which is a funny gag. Okay, we've got one that we've talked about quite a lot called Kabushiki Gaisha Magi Lumiere, Magi Lumiere Co., which is about what if magical girl became an office lady job and was taken over by VC money. And in the manga world, that's a good thing.
I mean, I like the concept. I think that's funny, you know?
Yeah.
It could go different ways. There was like, what was that anime from a couple years ago? Akiba Maid War, where all of the maid cafes were like semi-militaristic autonomous companies.
Yeah.
It could go that way, which would be not as good.
Yeah, I've read most of the manga of this, and I think it's pretty fun in a lot of spots. If you ignore the fact that the concept is sort of rancid, like on its face, I think it is fun. It's a fun ride. We've got something called Kankin Kiki Level X Lockdown Zone : Level X. I don't know anything about this. The synopsis, I'll just give it to you straight. Ryoka is awakened by a flurry of text messages from her mother. Panicked and rushed, mom is clearly concerned for Ryoka's safety, but she is not too keen on letting her daughter know why. Her reasoning being that nothing could really properly describe what is happening. The world might be ending, and there might be a massive new life form on the roof of their apartment building.
Uh-oh, that doesn't sound good.
You know what? Who fucking knows? This could go anyway, but that is enough to intrigue me, I guess. This is definitely a watch the first episode to find out. And the final one is Ao no Miburu. This is essentially yet another story about the clash between the loyalists and the revolutionaries. Could you call them revolutionaries? Modernists, maybe? In, like, turn-of-the-century Japan. Not turn-of-the-century Japan. Before turn-of-the-century Japan. 1863. Shogunate dying. Everybody's fucking up. killing each other in the streets, etc., etc. Yeah,
the age of the Shinsengumi.
Yes, the rise of the Shinsengumi. This is a kid who, quote unquote, believes in justice, whatever that means, and essentially joins the proto Shinsengumi to be like a sword fighty guy. This could be extremely boring or kind of good, depending on the level of animation, like period.
I mean, I think that part of the reason that particular time period gets referenced so much in Japanese media is because it was a big time frame of political upheaval and social violence, right? There's a lot of conflict to write around there. So
yes,
I guess what I'm saying is that if you make that boring, then that it sounds like a skill issue.
I mean, it can be pretty boring. I honestly, I think there is an aspect of that, but it's mostly that people were killing each other with swords.
That's cool, though.
Yeah, like that was the last time people were allowed to kill each other with swords. It was kind of that era. You know, only 50 years later, they were killing each other with guns. So,
which is not as cool.
Not as cool. See, the thing is, like, this is a lot like if we constantly had stories set at the American the American Civil War, but we do not make endless stories about people thinking it's cool to fight in the Civil War. You know, Wolverine did it that one time, and that's pretty much it.
Vampire Bill from True Blood.
Yeah, we touched on that a little bit. Vampire Bill, love that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Suke. Suke. But yeah, really, that is one of those big cultural differences between America and Japan. Our obsession with the past stops basically at like 1920.
There's a lot of mid-century history we'd rather forget at this point.
Mid and a half century.
Yeah. Oh man, okay, is that?
That's it.
Anime season 2024. Fall edition. Stuff to look forward to, folks.
That's it. That's all of them.
That's all of them. And if you see anything out there that we didn't mention on this show, do not watch it. Do not give it your time or your money.
Do not do that. Avoid it like the plague.
If we didn't talk about it here, then you can take that as a negative endorsement of its existence. We'd rather it didn't exist.
I am begging you.
Do not watch Ari Ferretta season 3.
Jesus Christ, do not. No, don't do that.
Do not do that. Do not watch ReZero season 3. You don't need it.
How can there only be 3 seasons of that? It feels like it's been 100 billion episodes and like movies and games and shit by now.
You do not need MF Ghost second season. Go listen to MF Doom.
No. I don't know. That is the. I really don't want to hate on Initial D, but like the manga's like really. It looks bad. It looks really bad. That guy, you know, his art style is not for me. So I skipped MF Ghost, but you know, I do like Initial D. So I that one's a little tough for me.
Okay, well, do not watch The Healer Who Was Banished from His Party Is In Fact the Strongest.
Yes, do not watch that. Do not watch Sword Art Online Alternative : Gun Gale Online 2. We don't need more.
Do not watch it's over. The Seven Deadly Sins : 4 Nights of the Apocalypse season 2.
Jesus Christ, do not watch that. Do not watch the 5th season. Somehow there are 5 seasons of Is It Wrong to Try to Pick Up Girls in a Dungeon?
The answer is still yes.
Yeah, don't do that. What the fuck is wrong with you?
Okay, handsome and beautiful listener, that's enough of us commanding you to do things from the safety of our recording studio. Go out, take this knowledge, inform yourself.
You have your marching orders.
Check us out on TikTok. Watch, give us views on YouTube, I guess. I don't know.
Yes, follow on the Blue Sky,
yeah,
please. Yeah,
download the episodes from Apple Podcasts and give us 5 stars. Do all the stuff that good little listeners are supposed to do, and we shall reward you with candy and treats.
Yes, and speaking of, just... for doing our due diligence, we will have to begrudgingly shout out Will. Hey, buddy, thanks for the 5 stars.
You know what? He followed through.
You did.
You
followed through. I really appreciate that. Thank you for giving us the 5 stars.
Thank you.
Thanks, Will.
Thank you.
All right, let's get the fuck out of here.
Bye. Bye.
Damn. Is it too late to go to broadcasting school?